Hello, it's Debbie back again with the Decatur Herald and Review, this time for Wednesday, August 17, 2016, reading the e-edition, starting with Ag Leaders Announce State Fair Foundation. This is by Dan Petrella, the Herald and Review Springfield Bureau Chief. Springfield. Frustrated with the lack of legislative progress, a group of agricultural leaders is bypassing the General Assembly to form a private foundation to support the state fairgrounds in Springfield and DuQuoin. Characterizing it as a completely private initiative, Republican Governor Bruce Rauner applauded the effort, which was announced Tuesday morning during Agriculture Day at the Illinois State Fair. The governor has been a proponent of legislation to create a fairgrounds foundation since taking office, but the idea hasn't won support in the General Assembly. The wonderful thing for the people of Illinois is now private citizens, farm families, community leaders, ag executives are stepping forward to take the leadership on this initiative, Rauner said. We're not going to wait. The General Assembly won't do it. Private citizens are going to do it. The foundation hasn't raised any money yet, but Rauner said he and his wife look forward to donating. State officials estimate that there is a backlog of repair projects at the two fairgrounds totaling roughly $180 million. The bulk of the work is in Springfield, but there are at least $12 million worth of repair needed in DuQuoin. We're not going to kick the can down the road anymore, said Illinois Department of Agriculture Director Raymond Poe, who as state representative sponsored legislation that would have created a similar foundation. As Poe spoke to a large crowd at an Agricultural Day breakfast at the fairgrounds, a slideshow displayed pictures of crumbling mortar, peeling paint, and other deterioration. Poe will serve on the foundation's board, but will be an honorary role without voting privileges. Heidi Brown McCreary, director of the Illinois Historic Preservation Agency, will serve on the board in the same capacity. John Slayton, a vice president at U.S. Bank, who's been involved with the fair for decades, will serve on the board as a full member. There are many individuals and corporations eager to give money to support the fairgrounds, Slayton said, and he's been involved in discussions about creating a foundation for about a decade. Governor Rauner really took a lead, Slayton said, and he's the one that gets credit for the formation of this foundation. The foundation is likely to face scrutiny from Democrats in the legislature who've been skeptical of the Rauner administration's proposed collaborations with private nonprofits. House Speaker Michael Madigan, Democrat, Chicago, created a task force to look into similar relationship between the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity and a newly formed Economic Development Corporation headed by the department's former director. I assume that the groups looking at public-private partnerships will look at this as well and be monitoring their activity, Madigan spokesman Steve Brown said. Brown said that while there's no dispute that the fairgrounds facilities need support, the bills to create a foundation contain big loopholes that would have circumvented the competitive bidding process used for state projects. State Senator Bill Brady, Republican Bloomington, and State Representative Tim Butler, Republican Springfield, who represent the Springfield Fairgrounds, both praised the new foundation in a statement issued by the governor's office. Brady sponsored the most recent foundation bill, which stalled in the Senate this spring. End of that article. Next, in education, Milliken welcomes increasing numbers of students. This is by Teresa Churchill, a senior writer with H&R. Decatur. Paul and Michelle Archibald knew they had a good thing going before they had everything unloaded from their daughter's 2001 Honda Acura. Could you guys use some extra hands? Junior McKinley Parator of Oswego called as she and two other smiling first-year experienced mentors approached to help the family carry boxes all the way up to the fourth floor of Dolson Hall. That's where Brittany Doward Archibald of Bartonville, a freshman planning to major in commercial music, will be sharing a dorm room with Limestone Community High School classmate and friend Teresa Naples. Yes! Was Michelle's Archibald relieved reply. Scenes like this happened again and again Tuesday as Milliken University welcomed the last 150 of 457 new first-year students on the university's official move-in day, 6 days before the fall semester begins Monday. This is up from 424 first years the university had on move-in day 1 year ago. But Sarah Schupanis, Vice President for Enrollment and Marketing said looking at the total number of new students, including transfers, transients, and those who have been readmitted, shows an even more encouraging trend. She said Millikan already has 613 new traditional students as of Tuesday, compared to 579 one year ago. The latter number grew to 655 by the end of the 2015-16 year, up from 648 the year before and 639 the year before that. This represents a lot of hard work, Shupanis said. We're seeing more international students from more countries, but we're also seeing more students from Central Illinois rediscovering the options Millikan offers closer to home. Downard Archibald, who plans to major in commercial music, and Naples, who plans to study music education, reflect that trend. One of my music teachers recommended Millikan, Downard Archibald said. We love the campus. Joanne Naples, Teresa's mom, said that the young men who helped them up the stairs said they're majoring in music, too. Our girls are meeting other students already, she said. Parator, an accounting major, said helping younger students move in Tuesday was a great icebreaker for everyone. Oh my gosh, it's so much fun, she said. Ashley Hartzog Cleland, residential communities coordinator, said resident assistants and fraternity sorority students were helping with the move-in as well, and that Millikan likes all freshmen in their rooms by 2 p.m. on move-in day so they can attend their floor meetings later in the afternoon and hear about other first-week activities. An integral part is first-year university seminar, giving first-year students the chance to connect with family members and first-year experience mentors. They will be performance learning workshops Friday afternoon, 2 days of community service Friday and Saturday as part of the United Way of Decatur and Mid-Illinois Day of Action, and an opening convocation on Sunday evening. Shupin has said Millikan hopes to keep enrollment trending upward with specialized campus visit days in addition to general ones set for October 10th and 29th, November 11th, January 16th, February 20th, and April 28th. We're going to spotlight visit days focusing on business, STEM, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, health professions, education, arts, and entrepreneurship, and humanities and communication, she said. It's an exciting time for us. End of that article. On to crime and courts. Investigation complete in police involved shooting. This is by Tony Reed, an H&R staff writer. Decatur. The Illinois State Police investigation into the police-involved shooting in Decatur is complete, and the file is now with Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott. It was announced Tuesday. Lonnie D. Mitchell II was shot and seriously wounded by Officer Andrew Whitmer on July 11th. The investigation into the shooting was turned over to the state police by Decatur Police Chief Jim Getz. Mitchell, 40, who was allegedly armed with a knife and a BB gun that looked like a semi-automatic handgun, is recovering from his wound. Getz said Tuesday the Whitmer remains on administrative leave and that status will continue until Scott reaches the decision based on the report. The state police have previously said they investigate the facts so the state's attorney can conduct a prosecutorial review to weigh whether the use of force was justified and whether there should be any legal action taken against the officer. Scott said Tuesday the very thick shooting report had landed on his desk at a busy time as he deals with several impending trials that will require his full attention. But the state's attorney said the shooting report does carry high importance with his office. I'll get it done as quickly as possible, he added. It's a priority because people are going to want to know, but I've also got to prioritize the trials I've got too. Scott said his working approach will involve himself going through the report page by page and having his chief investigator and probably his first assistant go through it too. Asked how long it's likely to take to reach a conclusion, he replied, I really can't say. If I didn't have anything else going on, I could have an answer pretty quickly, but we're very busy right now. In the statement announcing that Lieutenant Greg Kavanaugh, who headed the investigation, had now completed his work, the state police urged patience in waiting for an outcome. Please keep in mind the case file contains hundreds of pages of documents and will take some time to review, the statement noted. End of that article. Continuing with a family article, former Early Head Start director to lead Baby Talk, that's all caps, an acronym, T-A-L-K, former Early Head Start director to lead Baby Talk. This is by Teresa Churchill, senior writer with H&R, Decatur. Named Tuesday to take over for founder Claudia Quigg as executive director of Baby Talk, Shauna Asia, EJEH, is looking to boost the national profile of agency's model for nurturing early childhood development. Board President Tricia Erickson said the Mount Zion woman and former Baby Talk employee was the unanimous choice of the board because she has the network and the skills to do it. She's politically savvy and an amazing speaker, Erickson said. She will take Claudia's vision and grow Baby Talk. Aja, 49, directed the agency's early Head Start program from 2010 to 2014 before working for the past 2 years as associate director for the Head Start State Collaboration Office. She will continue serving on the executive committees of the Illinois Early Learning Council and the Illinois Home Visiting Task Force after she returns to Baby Talk in her new role September 7th. Aja will work alongside Quigg until Quigg steps down in December. I have some huge shoes to fill, Aja said, but I see a very real opportunity to expand the Baby Talk model nationally to impact more children and families. Quigg, 63, started Baby Talk in 1986 for families of children from birth to age 3, with the acronym standing for Teaching Activities for Learning and Knowledge. Talk. Teaching Activities for Learning and Knowledge. Locally, the agency's individual services begin at birth. Representatives go to see the family of every baby born at Decatur Memorial Hospital and HSHS St. Mary's Hospital, continuing with home visits to 200 low-income families and maintaining a presence at Crossing Healthcare. To address special needs, Baby Talk offers Baby Talk offers a family literacy /GED program, a success together experiencing play and stimulation, or STEPS, program for children with developmental delays, and Foundations, an alternative school for teen parents. The agency's early Head Start program came online in 2010. Baby Talk also offers Kinder Music and Come Sign With Me classes. Its office at 500 East Lake Shore Drive and on location provides Baby Talk Time small parent-child groups where families can interact around a theme. I believe Shauna will continue to promote Baby Talk's culture of passion, respect, collaboration, and a desire to become ever better, Quigg said. I can't wait to see what the next 30 years bring. A native of Montreal, Quebec, Aja came to the United States to attend the American University in Washington, D.C., where she earned bachelor and master's degrees in public communication. She previously worked for 10 years for the National Family Planning and Reproductive Health Association in Washington as the annual meeting and membership manager before she was promoted to director of memberships and meetings. Aja is married to David Aja, a senior process analytical chemist at Archer Daniels Midland Company. They have 5 children, Jeffrey Aja, 27, of Menasha, Wisconsin, Nisa Grant, 22, of Mount Pleasant, Michigan, David Aja, 15, a sophomore at Mount Zion High School, Victoria Aja, 11, a sixth grader at Mount Zion Intermediate School, and Syra Aja, 5, a kindergartner at McGowey School. End of that article. Continuing to A2, National. Surgeon General Murthy visits Flint for second time this year. Flint, Michigan, AP. More people in Flint, Michigan are taking advantage of added health care services, while some still need to know what's available as the city continues to move forward from a lead-tainted water crisis, according to U.S. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy. Murthy met Tuesday with community leaders and health professionals in his second visit to Flint this year. We want people to go to the doctor, not just when they're critically ill, but well before that, so they can understand what steps they need to keep their themselves and their families healthy, he said. Murthy also was in town in February when he met with Flint residents, doctors, social workers, and students. Since February, the water has actually been improving as far as quality, he said. It doesn't mean our work is complete by any means, but I think we can take hope in the fact that progress has been made. Flint was under state financial oversight when it switched in 2014 from the Detroit water system to the Flint River to save money. But corrosion controls were not added to the river water, which caused lead to leach from old pipes into homes and businesses. Tests later found elevated lead levels in some children. Residents also complained of skin rashes. The city has since returned to Detroit's water system. Results of a study by the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in response to complaints about the rashes in Flint water are expected to be released soon, Murthy said Tuesday. Still, he said the city's full recovery will be a long process. A federally emergency declaration ended Sunday, which means the state of Michigan now has to cover the full cost of bottled water, filters, and other water supplies provided to Flint residents. Federal resources, health programs, and monitoring efforts will continue. I wanted to make clear, while the declaration is ending, our commitment to support Flint is not, Murthy said. We will continue to be here to support Flint and its recovery as long as it takes. Since January 9th, more than 2.2 million cases of bottled water, more than 130,200 water filters, more than 287,000 replacement cartridges, and more than 52,600 at-home water testing kits have been distributed to Flint water system customers. End of that article. On page A3, we have a variety here, starting with crime in courts. Serial burglar and ID thief caught, police say. This is by Tony Reed of the H&R staff. Decatur. Detectives say they have caught a serial credit card burglar and identity thief who plagued neighborhoods on the west side of Decatur. Sworn statements accuse 19-year-old Jaleel L. Mangrum of 7 counts of burglary during July and August from parked cars and another 7 counts of using stolen credit cards obtained from those crimes to buy or try to buy goods online. Decatur police said Mangrum also took cell phones, computers, and grabbed anything of value from his target's vehicles. One victim, whose credit card was stolen July 26 from her SUV parked in the 200 block of North Victoria Avenue, was hit again at the same location August 1st. On the second occasion, a laptop computer was taken, and it's alleged Mangrum caused damage that will cost $4,000 to repair while breaking into the vehicle. Another victim, whose cell phone was stolen, used an app to read text messages sent using his phone and was traced to Mangrum, according to police. The statements reported the suspect is telling his grandmother, with whom he lives, that he bought the phone for $10. His grandmother didn't believe him, and she called the phone's owner and met with him to return it. Detectives who say they traced Mangrum from purchases he tried to make with a stolen credit card found him living in his grandmother's basement where he slept on a couch. Jaleel said that's where he slept and kept his things, the sworn statement said. He picked up his blanket and Detective Whitmer observed the Visa debit card belonging to a female burglary victim on the couch. Whitmer then advised Jaleel he was under arrest. Police allege he tried to make a run for it, but only got as far as the stairs, where he was tackled by another officer. Police said he continued to struggle to break free, and a charge of resisting and obstructing was added to the list of charges. It alleged other stolen credit cards and evidence were found in the basement. Mangrum remained in the Macon County Jail on Tuesday in lieu of posting $50,000 bond. If he makes bail, he's been ordered to stay away from his alleged burglary and identity theft victims. End of that article. Next headline says, French Academy gets year started. Welcome back, Bash gets French Academy ready. This is by Valerie Wells, again, from the staff. Decatur. First day of school today will be a little less chaotic for French Academy students, thanks to an idea of Principal Julie Faines and her staff. A group of teachers and I sat down and collaborated and said, we want to do something different, Faines said, in between greeting students with hugs. Our school is on the cutting edge of things with the change to the STEM Academy, and we want to start the year off right with our families. On Tuesday, the school hosted a welcome back to school bash with music, haircuts for the boys and styling for the girls, hot dogs, ice cream, and a chance for kids and parents to meet the teachers and drop off supplies. STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and math, and French puts the focus squarely on that area last year. Math is Bonnie Bell's favorite subject, and she said she wants to be a scientist when she grows up. She's in fourth grade this year, and both she and her mom, Leticia, said she was anxious to get back to school. This is where I can learn things, Bonnie said. Letitia Bell said she thought the event was a wonderful idea, giving students and parents a fun and relaxed time to ease the transition back to class. It's a great chance to meet the parents and start things off on a positive note, said kindergarten teacher Sarah Kelly, who waited in the hallway with fellow teacher Tarika Mutri to usher students in to see their classroom. Both women said kids were excited and enthusiastic, but they expect a few tears today, mostly from the parents, Mutri said. The event was a cooperative effort with the Heartland Community Church, and Pastor Joe Bowman, along with several church members, brought the mobile hot dog cooker and ice cream to hand out. They're in the habit of stopping off in neighborhoods with the cooker and passing out hot dogs to anyone who wants one, along with chips, a bottle of water, and, a quote Bowman, a mouthful of Jesus. And to quote Bowman, a mouthful of Jesus. The church has adopted French and Stephen Decatur Middle School, Bowman said, and considers anything that can be done to smooth the path for students and families at those schools to be a way of helping to bless them. We have to go outside the church walls, he said. Reflections Academy of Beauty brought enough supplies to give all the girls a first day makeover as long as they didn't want to get too complicated. We only have 2 hours, said stylist Ashley Blue, laughing. Tamiko Coleman's son, Kamari, is going into kindergarten at French this year. Some of my cousins go to French, and they always get good grades, Coleman said. It seems like a good place. End of that article. Continuing, the headline says, Richland Buildings, a peak of what's to come on campus. Richland Projects moving ahead as new president arrives. This is by Chris Lisvardi from the H&R staff. Decatur. With the school year about to get underway, Richland Community College is moving ahead with one building project and hoping another can get restarted before the end of the construction season. Faculty members from across the college's academic divisions met Tuesday to discuss ways to make more use of reconfigured space that will be part of the Carroll Center for Business project. Various prototypes for the space have been tested in the past couple of months. We've been able to see a taste of it over the past summer, said Andy Hines, Dean of Mathematics, Science, and Business. We want to get more use during the fall and spring. The goal is to create active learning spaces and help faculty be the most effective in teaching students, Hines said. Different types of classes can utilize the space, whether it's for business class, math, science, English, or others, said Tina Zindel-McWilliams, curriculum and grants coordinator. She said that a redesign is starting on the second floor of the South Wing, but could spread throughout the campus in the future with additional funding. This really is our vision for the future, Zindel-McWilliams said. This is what we want to take Richland in. This is where we want to take Richland in any classroom redesign. So she's the curriculum and grants coordinator. The training session came as classes are scheduled to start next week. In addition, the Board of Trustees held its monthly meeting later in the day, the first one with Chris Valdez as president. Valdez is looking forward to seeing the Carroll project progress, along with the potential of construction on the Student Success Center being restarted. We want to present a different image of Richland as people drive past, Valdez said about the Student Success Center sitting unfinished. It's going to be an incredible improvement on how we serve students. Funding for the project is pending review by state's Office of Management and Budget, followed by another review from the governor's office, said Greg Florian, Richland's vice president of finance and administration. The money is there, Florian said. We're coming close to losing the construction season. With the Student Success Center now projected for possible completion in June, Florian said the Carroll Center could be ready about the same time. The Carroll Project has really engaged faculty members. As Florian said, it sparked interest from every division of the college. End of that article. Continuing with education, Mount Zion okays a tentative budget. This is by Ryan Voiles of the staff. Mount Zion, with increased money from county sales tax and assurance of full funding from the state, the Mount Zion School Board approved a tentative budget of $22.25 million for the coming year. The budget, which will be available for the public to view at the district's office for the next 30 days, is about $500,000 more than the current budget. Of that, about $15.8 million is in the education fund, which covers the basics of the school. The budget covers the fiscal year that began July 1st and runs until the end of next June. A hearing and final approval of the budget is expected in a meeting September 20th. Unlike the past several years, the school is expected to receive its full funding from the state. Over the past 5 years, the district has been left at least $500,000 short of what it was promised by the state, Associate Superintendent Brian Rhodes said. In addition, the portion of county sales tax dedicated to local schools grow. The percentage the district has received has gone up from 13.9 to 14.9 over the past 4 years, which Superintendent Travis Roundcount told the board as a result of more students coming into the district. Mount Zion's a place to be, he said, adding that the district's reputation has grown in recent years to the point that local employers have been telling new employees to send their children to the village. As of late, we've been hearing that there's only one choice, and it's Mount Zion, Roundcount said. In other business, the board approved refinements to the district's hiring process. Among the changes in the proposal, clarifies the drug testing policy for new hires, specifically if the drug test comes back dilute, generally a result of someone ingesting an unusual amount of water prior to the test. If the test comes back positive dilute, then employment is terminated immediately. A negative dilute will require the applicant or new employee to submit a hair sample for drug testing within 48 hours of receiving prior results. The other major change is that the new employees are no longer required to undergo tuberculosis testing, with the exception of pre-K teachers and teaching assistants. End of that article. In the local briefs for today, Clinton, meth suspect sought. One person still is being sought following an investigation of methamphetamine traffic in DeWitt County. Police say they continue to look for Rebecca L. Justice, 35, at Decatur. She's one of four people facing charges of felony methamphetamine trafficking following an investigation by Task Force 6, a Central Illinois-based multi-agency drug enforcement unit. Police say they continue to look for Justice, and anyone with information about her location or this case is asked to contact their local police department. Moroa Principal Agreement. The Moroa Forsyth School Board reached a tentative agreement Tuesday with Bryce Stewart to become a high school / middle school principal, Board President Russ Corey said. Stewart will be expanding his duties from his current position at the middle school. In addition, Phil Appleby will become assistant to the principal and high school middle athletic director, Corey said. Corey said the changes are for the 2016-17 school year, as the district covers the vacancy created when high school principal Scott Andrian resigned effective August 1st to become principal at Dunlap High School. And then finally, Shelbyville, ID theft warning. Shelbyville area residents are warned to check their incoming mail carefully for unsolicited credit cards from Chase Bank. Police Chief David Tallman said his office has had a rash of complaints of residents having their identity stolen to open Chase credit cards through the Amazon loyalty program. The program rewards new cardholders with $50 gift cards that the scammers are collecting. Often residents first become aware they've been scammed when an unsolicited credit card from Chase arrives in the mail. Tallman said the cards need to be canceled immediately and reported to Chase Bank's fraud division at 1-800-955-9060. And this concludes part one of the Wednesday, August 17, 2016, reading by Debbie. I will be back shortly with the death notices and the rest of part two.